Have you heard about Global Poker? Global Poker is the fastest growing card room in the US today, and it's available online at globalpoker.com. Global Poker is a social poker site that offers safe and secure cash out options by using their unique and patented sweepstakes model. Players can compete in big guaranteed tournaments, jackpot sit and goes, or cash games featuring Hold'em, Omaha, and even Crazy Pineapple. Don't wait. Check out Global Poker today.
Poker Stories is an audio series that features casual interviews with some of the game's best players and personalities. Each episode highlights a well-known figure in the poker world and dives deep into their favorite tales, both on and off the felt.
Hello and welcome back to Poker Stories, a podcast brought to you by Card Player, the Poker Authority, and hosted by me, Julio Rodriguez. This is episode number 62 and features two-time World Poker Tour champion and World Series of Poker bracelet winner, Matt Waxman. Matt got his poker career really going back in 2009 when he final tabled the 5K 6-max event at the World Series of Poker. The next year, he won an event at Harrah's in Atlantic City to pick up a WSOP circuit ring. In 2011, he earned the biggest score of his career by winning the WPT Grand Prix de Paris for just over $720,000. He nearly took down the Festa al Lago Classic the next year, and in 2013, he won his first WSOP bracelet, taking down a $1,000 No Limit Hold'em event for $305,000. The Parkland, Florida-based poker pro then had a deep run in the 2014 WSOP main event, ultimately taking home $186,000 for 45th place. Just last year, Matt won his second World Poker Tour title. This time, it was the $15,000 buy-in WPT Tournament of Champions at Aria, where he picked up another $463,000 for his poker resume. Now he's 34 years old, and Matt has racked up more than $4.1 million in tournament earnings. I think you'll like this episode. Matt is one of the more thoughtful guys on the tournament circuit. He recently just wrapped up an initiative on his Twitter page where he encouraged others to spread positivity throughout the poker world. In exchange, his followers had the chance to win a percentage of his action in an upcoming tournament, part of which will also go to charity. Anyway, that's enough intro. Here's my conversation with Matt Waxman. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Julio?
I'm doing well. You are coming off of a deep run at the World Poker Tour Venetian main event. Is that what brought you out to Vegas?
No, actually, I was out here setting up for a little poker project of mine, and I just decided to play the main event at the Wynn and then the one at the Venetian just because I was here and had some free time on my hands.
Yeah, I'm looking through your Instagram, and I'm not seeing a lot of home pictures. It looks like you are a resident of the world these days. Where do you call your home base?
Well, I'm in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Okay.
I've been there for about 4 years, and I've lived in South Florida maybe since I was 10.
So. Yeah.
But I do a fair amount of traveling, and I'm much more likely to post something on Instagram when I'm abroad than when I'm home.
All right, so let's go back to the beginning. Because you didn't get your start in Florida, it was in New Jersey, right?
I was born in Jersey.
Yeah.
But my start, like...
Well, I just mean your start in life.
Oh, yeah. I started life in New Jersey, yeah, Princeton.
What were you getting into as a kid there? Because I know you're the youngest of three, but there's like a space, right?
Big space, yeah, yeah. My brother is the second oldest, and he's 7 years older than me. And my sister is 11 years older than me.
Yeah, so you had siblings, but not really.
Yeah, I was kind of like, I had siblings, but I was like the little kid, not cool enough to hang out with them. So I was pretty much an only child, yeah.
So what were you getting into back in the day?
When I was little, I would basically spend most of my time playing sports with friends, like in the yard, and a lot of video games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're 6 months younger than me. I'm an 84 summer baby, so... Similar times of growing up, obviously, the Nintendo era or whatever.
Yep.
What was your dad doing that made the move to South Florida?
So my pops, he owned a marine biology company.
What does that mean?
So he was like kind of like a consultant for like things that had to do with aquatic problems. I don't know. Like he helped out with the big oil spill, the BP one. Mm-hmm. He was in there for the Gulf, and he even helped like with a big shipwreck in Australia on the on the Great Barrier Reef.
So I'm guessing business is better in Florida than New Jersey for that.
Well, the company that bought him out in New Jersey was based in Florida. So like most companies, when you buy a company, you kind of want like somebody from that company to work for you, so you can help transition like all the
newcomers.
Yeah, all the all the things that companies are passing on to each other.
And what about mom? What does she do?
Mom was a real estate agent when I was a kid. Before that, she was a teacher. And then after we moved to Florida, she became a teacher for a little bit, too. She was teaching, like, I want to say second grade.
Okay. Was she ever your teacher?
No, but I think...
Because I've heard horror stories about that.
I think one time she subbed.
Okay.
For one of my classes. I think. I can't... My memory's
like this was just a nightmare you had or something?
No, I mean, I don't remember being too bad of an experience, but... Yeah, no, mom's teaching, and then she's been retired for a couple years.
All right, so you moved down to South Florida, Parkland specifically. What were you getting into as a teenager there?
Same old stuff. A little bit of sports, video games, just hanging out with friends.
Did you have a goal in mind, a drive, something you wanted to do, a dream back when you were a kid? No matter how far-fetched,
When I was in Jersey, my dream was always to play point guard for Duke and then go to the NBA. Then I realized that I'm a white 6-foot Jew. And,
yeah. Well, I mean, you're not short, but you're not exactly NBA height.
No. Or skill, for that matter. And, that dream soon deflated. And then I'll still play basketball from time and again, but I didn't even play in high school. I'm not that.
Reality big. Sets in big when it comes to genetics.
yeah, for sure. And then after I had a more realistic dream when I was in high school, and I was just like, I'm going to be an entrepreneur, a businessman.
You didn't have anything specific in mind? No, like one in a million idea. You're just like, I'm going to make moves.
Yeah, I was like, I'm going to own a business. Like when I was in summer camp, I used to go to this Kutcher's Sports Academy in Monticello, New York. And my parents would, like, send me there and give me, like, $100 to buy, like, sodas or something like that, like singles. And then they would, like, stack me up on food. And then it would be, like, visitors weekend. And they came. And they'd be like, you need some more money? Like, can we help you out? And they're like, how much do you have left? I'm like, oh, I got, like, $240. They're like, wait, what? We only gave you $100. Where'd you get all the money? I'm like, oh, I've been selling cup of noodles and
I'm flipping goods and services here, Mom. It's all good.
It just clicked one day, like my parents bought me a thing, a cup of noodles, and people were like, yeah, I'll give you $3 for one of those. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, you got it. So I'd open up my trunk. I had the key, and I'd just be like, what do you want? I got a cup of noodles. I got candy. Tell me what you need.
You had the whole game. You'd do well in prison. Hopefully you don't end up there.
I don't think I would do well in prison, actually. No.
Like Red and Shawshank Redemption. You've been known to locate some items from time to time.
I mean, carving my own chess set might be kind of cool, but like, I don't know.
That would be the one benefit of being in prison.
Yeah, you get a lot of time for whittling.
All right, so you're in school. You caught on to poker early. Because we're basically the same age, but I didn't catch on to poker until after Moneymaker had been on TV and the online sites were bombarding me with pop-up ads, Mm-hmm. But you were like, no, Robert Varconi's my guy, right?
When I got into poker was, I always played like for fun with my family, like for pennies and stuff. And we would play like 5-card draw. I didn't even know what Texas Hold'em was. But then one day in study hall, like I was friends with like a lot of like the AP kids, like the nerdier guys, and we would always just like gamble for like.
Were
lots
you
of money.
One of those AP kid nerdy guys?
I was in some AP classes, but I feel like I wish I could call myself nerdy, but I don't know if I was ever really that smart.
But studious. At least,
no, actually the opposite. Maybe I was smart, but I was never really studious.
Got it.
So, but yeah, that was my friends I like to hang out with, and we would play poker in study hall. We would like. Put all of our backpacks in a circle so they couldn't see the cards, and we'd have like a piece of paper with a sheet that was like saying how much money people were up.
No chips.
And if you made like $20, that was like a really good day. And
what games were you playing back then?
So we would play No Limit Hold'em, but I think we played that you had to use both of your cards.
That's an interesting twist.
Yeah, I and this was when I first got into it, so I didn't even know otherwise.
This wasn't like a rule change you guys decided on. This was a misunderstanding
this
of the actual
rules. This is
just
how they told me the rules were. Yeah. And I was just like, all right, yeah, whatever. Because I was just watching, and I didn't. I have a pretty good understanding for like statistics, and mm-hmm. I was able to pick up the game rather quickly. And I was just watching them play, and I just noticed them making like lots of mistakes, and I always felt like I had a good knack for being able to read people.
Mm-hmm.
So I just said, you know what? I'm going to play with you guys. I worked jobs. I was a soccer referee, and I worked at a retail store when I was in high school. So
what were you selling?
Clothes.
Yeah?
Before that, I was in a department store.
You folding Abercrombie, or yeah. What were you doing?
Nah, it was called Structure.
I remember Structure.
Yeah, and then they got bought out by Express, and all the clothes just got a little
not tighter.
I
remember I used exactly to fit into Structure in high school.
Yeah,
now Structure's still around, but I think it's like a cheap Kmart brand or something like that.
Oh, really? I thought they just got bought out by Express.
I'm pretty sure somebody bought the name out after they got eaten by Express. Why do I know about this?
I don't know.
Whatever.
You're a knowledgeable person.
Not a good brand now. Maybe it wasn't back then. But anyway.
But yeah, so I had some money because I was always working and I never asked my parents for anything,
mm-hmm.
Even though I was very fortunate to have them because, like, you know, it was a nice safety net in case I ever went broke, which I did plenty of times as a poker player. But yeah, so I remember risking like a couple bucks and playing and the rush that I got the first time I was gambling for just like to win like $3. My heart was beating faster than it was when I won my WPT. So.
Do you think what drew you was the gambling aspect of it or the winning money aspect of it?
Winning money, for sure.
Okay.
But so I've just always been competitive and I love games. Like, mm-hmm. I love using my brain to try to come up with strategies and just, like, beat people. You know, I used to be very competitive. But I think over the last few years I've definitely subsided in that area.
But you're going to this lunch game or study hall game,
yeah.
And you're not thinking, I really want the feeling of being all in. You're thinking, no, these guys are easy marks, and I can take their money.
I mean, I definitely didn't think they were easy marks.
I have an advantage, and
I thought I had an advantage. I played a little bit on party poker. I would play for play money, and
tell the truth. This podcast isn't legally binding.
No, yeah, I know. but yeah, I was very tight. You know, mm-hmm. I was just like I was very happy to like win like $3. I remember, and you know, so it was quite the rush and getting into poker and that feeling stayed with me for at least like 10 years. So, but I forget where I was going. Oh yeah. We used to like always get, our cards confiscated by our study hall teacher or like the principal in lunchroom. They would just like always like look for us. And like when we see them coming and then they would just take our cards and then we just pull out another deck as soon as they walk away.
So when it came time, well, when did you take the next step to be becoming more serious about poker then?
All right.
Was this in college already or?
No. So after we graduated, I was 18 years old and I was at my friend Logan's graduation party. And another friend of mine comes up to me and he's like, yo, I got a game. This kid, he's home for the summer from Yale and he's playing with all the Mu Alpha Theta guys, the math club. And they play No Limit Hold'em, $1, $2. You know, you can buy in for like $50 and and it's a good game. We get pizza. So I'm like,
yeah,
all
25 right. Blinds, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. and obviously he's buying in for, I'm going to tell you who he was soon, but he was buying in for like $200-$300 obviously, and just like mashing the game.
Mm-hmm.
So my friend takes me after this graduation party, it's the summer, to this random kid's house. And he opens the door and it's Alex Jacob.
Oh,
but this wasn't the first time I met Alex.
Parkland's own Alex Jacob.
Yep, Alex Jacob. I actually knew Alex from middle school.
Oh, really?
We were on the basketball team together. He was a year older than me, and he was always like a really, really bright kid.
And
like,
tall.
Very tall, yeah. And like I remember his biggest regret was he got second place in the spelling bee. And he was so pissed because the winner got to go on ESPN and be in the spelling bee.
Oh, he meant the actual spelling bee.
Yeah.
Like the quarterfinals of the regionals of the Scripps National, whatever.
Yeah. He was like, and you know, I'm sure spelling was never even his like strong suit, but yeah, he just wanted to be on ESPN. You know
and for those who don't know who we're talking about, this is Alex Jacob, poker champion, obviously, but also known as probably the second best Jeopardy player of all time.
Yep. I mean, he could be the best. You know, when he jumped on Jeopardy, he was doing
I don't know
things.
If anybody's knocking on Ken Jennings, you know what
of
I
course,
mean?
Of course. Ken Jennings is just an encyclopedia of knowledge, but if you watch Alex play Jeopardy, mm-hmm. I don't think like him knowing is like I'm sure most of the people that he played against might have known more than him.
Yeah.
But his strategy was so much better than anyone else's because
he definitely poker played it up.
Every single person on Jeopardy will always go 200, 400, 600, and they always start with the low ones. But all the value is in the doubles.
Yeah.
And Alex would just, it would be on him and he'd be like, all right, Alex, your turn. And he would just go like, business, 800.
Yeah.
You know, and then
take a shot in the dark.
He's just trying to get the daily doubles. And then when he got it, he'd be like, yeah, I'll wager it all.
All in.
Let me try to build a lead right now. And then he would just game theory the crap out of these people.
Yeah. A lot of his wins in Final Jeopardy, his opponents couldn't even catch him mathematically. So
right.
He was winning way before that.
Right.
So this guy's basically coming back into your home game or hosting the home game.
Right. So we would go to Alex's house and play the home game, and I didn't even know what pot odds were.
Mm-hmm.
But I would play with Alex, and I think he just crushed the game. I would win too, and I would take those winnings, and we used to go out on a gambling boat because there wasn't really poker. In Florida, you could buy them for like $20. They'd give you like $3 $5 chips. They call them Redbirds, and then a stack of 20 25-cent chips, and you like ante 25 cents.
Yeah, I mean, you were playing before I was in South Florida because when I got there, it was $1 $2 cap.
Right,
like $2 per bet was the limit.
Now this is
before that. It was $10 in the pot, and then they stopped betting.
They had
turned the cards over.
They had stud going. There was a bad beat jackpot where you got to get a royal flush, but if it's in diamonds, you win the big jackpot.
Oh, okay.
The first time I ever went to the casino, people are smoking in there. It was disgusting. My buddy goes, yo, let's
get... The old Seminole?
Yeah, yeah. The Seminole Coconut Creek.
Exactly.
Because that one was like 15 minutes from my high school. And my buddy just goes, yo, let's skip study hall. It was senior year. He's like, let's skip study hall and go to the Seminole, man, the casino. I'm like, I've never been. Like, you sure that's a good idea? He's like, yeah, we're 18. Like, let's go play. So we go, and we get on the list. He takes the first seat. I take the second seat. I go play Tahoe, this game called Tahoe. You get three cards.
Yeah.
I don't even know the rules of it anymore. But you get three cards, and it's like a board game.
It was more popular in the 90s.
Yeah. And he's playing the stud, and all I hear is, royal flush, is that good? He has a royal flush in diamonds.
Oh, my God.
He wins the jackpot for 11 grand when we're in high school. So, like, I was happy for, like, winning $20. I would take $20 to go gamble at the casino. Like, that was, like, happy for me. And he just wins 11 grand. He just pays off his car. He's just crushing. And then that casino got so much business from my high school after that because everyone found out. So everyone's like, yeah, we're going to the casino. And it's just this disgusting.
Checking more IDs this weekend.
Yeah. And people don't know how good they have it now. Like, this room before, it was... There was like maybe 10 tables in there. The rake was unbeatable if you stay there for more than like a couple hours.
Yeah.
And you're just playing in a room of smoke.
I remember full ashtrays between every player.
Yeah.
It was that smoky.
I remember I used to always use like a jacket, and I would put it over my mouth. Yes. Like kind of like a filter because of all the smoke. I just remember some like old guy playing with his like Social Security puts an ashtray directly in front of me like – directly in front of me and starts ashing in front of me. And as I'm doing that, he just looks at me and goes, you got a problem? And I was like, no, I don't. I don't know. Do I?
Meanwhile,
like,
in Vegas, they've had smoke-free rooms for years at that point.
Yeah, for sure.
Florida was a little bit behind the times. But obviously, you weren't finding the action you liked at the casino. You got to get on the boat.
Yeah, yeah, sorry.
Gotta
Thanks
go
for
on
getting
the boat.
Us back on topic. Yeah, so Alex and I used to go drive and go on the boats. And it was 18 at first.
Mm-hmm.
But
this is the Sun Cruise or like?
No, it was called the Saint-Tropez.
Okay.
And I used to play in a 2-4 limit game. It was 2-4-8. It was like a really weird structured limit game. And I would just be like waiting for like two cards, 10 and higher. And then like put in raises. Hope I hit a pair. Put in more raises. Don't hit a pair. Fold.
Yeah.
Like it was really easy. And people like had no idea what was going on. And I remember it was me and just. No one under 40 at the table.
And this was still the summer before college?
Yeah. This is Saint-Tropez. And I'm telling my parents, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to my friend's house. We're gonna go to the movies and, you know, hang out. But really, I'm just going to this gambling boat, coming home at 6 in the morning, smelling like cigarettes. I'd have, like, cologne in my car. I hate cologne. But I would, like, spray it all over me so I don't smell like cigarettes. You know, and I just try to sneak in the house and shower real quick so they didn't know.
So that's when the game really caught you, right?
Well, yeah, so I started playing. I built, like, a little roll. I got it up to, like, $2,000, and then there was, like, this big tournament they were advertising with these flyers, and it was a $400 buy-in. So I played in the tournament, and everybody's talking about. I remember this. This was one of the first big hands in my life. Everyone's talking about this guy because he made the final table of the World Series of Poker main event.
Okay.
It was probably in the 90s. His name is John Spadavecchia.
I remember John. And yeah.
Yeah, really nice guy.
He has a son who plays too.
Yep. So I remember like just getting the money in. It was ace king against queens. I don't even remember which one I had. I probably had the ace king, and I busted him. And I ended up getting fourth in this tournament for like $2,000 or something.
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden I'm just like, whoa, I'm a tournament player. I can win poker. Like, I'm good at this game, clearly. If I did this in a tournament, it means I must be good. But obviously I didn't understand variance or any of these things. And I honestly believe there's like a certain amount of ignorance in poker where if you just have no clue and you just are so confident that you're the best, that you're just going to succeed. Like, I just believe there's something to it, like that confidence. And I had that when I was a young, dumb, stupid kid.
But meanwhile, I mean, you're going to school in the fall, right?
You'd already
enrolled at Florida State.
Florida State. I was accepted to Florida State. And
my condolences. I say that as a Gator.
How are you guys doing in the tournament?
I don't know. I haven't watched anything since Saturday.
Let me fill you in. Michigan beat you guys.
Oh, you're out. It hurts.
But yeah, so then so I did get in a tournament. Then there was another tournament before I went back to school, and I actually got heads up with Alex in that one.
That's awesome.
And I had all the chips, and of course I didn't know anything about shove ranges, and he just shoved all in every hand. I folded every hand, and then got too short, and he beat me.
Yeah.
And he was carrying around this massive trophy as like a brag, and I'm like, damn, this guy. But I was really lucky because he's like a really bright guy, and he was already playing like huge stakes on party poker with like he was friendly with Justin Bonomo back then, Z Justin, and he had like all these like friends, and he was just playing at poker at such a high level. He knew like so much about game theory and pot odds, and I had no idea. You know, I was just kind of like looking at people's faces and being like, oh, I don't think they have it.
He was at Yale and like spending his free time winning money on playing poker.
Yeah.
That tells you what you need to know about Alex. You know?
Right. He was just pumped up, and he's just like a really bright kid. And yeah, so I remember one day like, we were parking to go onto the Saint-Tropez, and they even like, I think they even like upped it to 21, like a few weeks in, and then I got the worst fake ID ever, and I was like getting on the boat.
Was it your name?
No, it was.
Because I remember like the big thing in Florida with fake IDs was it's less of an offense if you just use someone else's ID versus like altering your own.
It was a British. ID. I printed it up and I took like this big clear tape, and I mean, I'm just making this thing up, obviously. Like, this isn't a true story.
The statute of limitations has run out.
Yeah.
If they arrested you for underage gambling now, that'd be pretty funny.
Yeah, but this never happened. I'm just lying. So we're good. But yeah, so we used to play on that. I remember like asking Alex one day, they're like, hey, Alex, what are pot odds? You know, we're like putting up thousands of dollars to play poker. And I'm like, what are pot odds? You know, I have no. And he's like, oh, well, that's the odds. When you get... Yeah. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But like, it was nice to like get like a good base from somebody that was so established in poker already to kind of like understand. And it literally put me miles ahead of like a lot of players because, you know, nobody really had any clue what was going on back then. And there definitely wasn't like all the resources that there are today, like on computers, where like all the stuff that took me 10 years to learn, somebody can go online and learn it in like a month.
Yeah.
And I just had to learn it the hard way, like playing at the table, like figuring stuff out. That being said, though, I still feel like there's a lot of things that you pick up playing live for so long that you can't really teach. So
you were more of a live player to start.
Always been a live player, but ironically, like, my big start was from winning an online tournament.
Right. Well, before we get to FTOPS, you're at Florida State. What are you studying?
So I started out studying business, but I really hated accounting. So accounting 2, actually. Accounting 1 I could do. Accounting 2 was so annoying. So, and I didn't like the classes I was taking. So I said, look, I'm going to play professional poker. Like, this is what I want to do. Like, I got freedom. I can make a lot of money. Like, I enjoy this game. I want to be on TV. I wanted to be famous back then. Now I just don't want to talk to anyone. It's like,
well, you agreed to come on the podcast, so thank you for that.
Yeah, for sure. Like, that's nothing. But yeah, so I was just like, I want to do something that interests me. So I was like, and maybe it's something that could even help in poker. So I ended up changing my major to psychology and keeping a minor in business.
Okay.
And I would always tell my parents, like, I'm playing cards. And they were like, they would give them a heart attack. Like, they couldn't take it. But I promised them that I'd finish and get my degree first before I started. Because a lot of people would just jump right into poker and not get a degree. And even though I don't even honestly, I don't think that a degree means anything these days. Like, it's how hard you work and what you want to do, and you can learn anything you want just on your smartphone.
Yeah.
But that being said, like, I just wanted to make my parents happy and just have something to fall back on just in case. So yeah, I would play. I would play like the 5-10 games in Tallahassee, and there were some shady spots there. You know, we caught some guys cheating before, and it was crazy growing up like that.
Campus lodge games.
Well, I played some
campus
games.
Club.
I would play some. Lodge. I would play some games in the dorm too, but those were smaller stakes. But then I would kind of just play those for fun. Wouldn't really be taking that too seriously. But then we would play the home games.
Mm-hmm.
And this one guy was always offering a deal. He's like, yeah, I'll deal, no problem. And he's like, why does this guy always want a deal? Like, that's great, but like, why does he always want a deal? Sure enough, he was, using a shiner and knew what the cards were coming up were. And, he was like calling like 200 into a pot of 200 with a gut shot and just hitting it and winning massive pots. And like, I was just like, I'm not playing in this game anymore. And then sure enough, my friend kept playing. And he told me like a month later that they caught him cheating and he wasn't and they still let him play in the game. They just didn't let him deal. I was like, well, you guys, what is going on here?
They let him walk out of there?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
with his money?
Yeah, there's some games where, like,
there should have been some back pay
involved.
You're
going to have a black eye at least, you know? Like,
all right, so Florida State doesn't work out for you. You're like, I want to go back home to South Florida, right?
Yeah, the Hard Rock was just opening up, like the new one.
Mm-hmm.
And they had, like, sit-and-goes back then. They still didn't have, like, cash, really, but they had, like, sit-and-goes that you can play, and I moved home because my brother just graduated. Or, no, he didn't graduate, but he just moved home to Florida,
mm-hmm.
and he was living in Fort Lauderdale, and he said, yo, why don't you live with me? I got a two-bedroom apartment in Fort Lauderdale, so we moved in to a place called the Camden. Which is funny because now like tons of poker players live there.
Yeah.
And I tell them like, yeah, I used to live here 10 years ago, guys. Like, so,
yeah. So you transferred school, obviously. So got to make mom and dad
home.
Happy.
I transferred home. I was closer to mom and dad. I was living with my brother.
This is FIU? No, FAU.
Florida Atlantic University. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Owls. I was fine with it. You know, I could just take my classes and I could go play poker now in my spare time in like a big casino and just try to build a bankroll.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, I had my ups and downs.
Let's talk about, did you graduate, first of all?
Yeah, so I graduated. It took me 4.5 years, an
same
extra
as
half
me.
A year. But I didn't go any summers. So I'm happy about that. I took my summers and towards junior and senior year, I would even slip out to Vegas, play some satellites, and try to get into a World Series event.
How did those first few trips to Vegas go?
Terrible. I remember I would always bring like 10K out there with me, which was like pretty much my whole role, and usually just bust all of it. And then the first year I ever played the main event, I had $500 left in my wallet, and I was like trying to get into the main, but I never got staked for anything. And I remember taking the 500 and using it in a satellite. A multi-table satellite, a mega.
Your last $500?
My last 500. I had like 24
Did
bucks.
You at least have a plane ticket home?
I had a credit card.
Okay.
Worst case scenario. And I won the seat.
Yeah.
Didn't even sell action.
That's crazy.
Played the main the
that
next day.
That is such
day.
A kamikaze style of poker. Like.
Oh, this wasn't the first or the last time I did this.
And how did that bullet go well for you in the main? Did you cash?
I made level 3.
Oh.
And I started on time. I was sitting with... David Oppenheim was at my table. That was the pro. He was the guy that was at the table, like, you know, like, running the show, so to speak, like, just playing every pot.
Must have been 07? 08?
I want to say it was before that. Maybe, like, 6? 5?
Well, couldn't have been 05, because I'm older than you. 06 was my first summer as a 21-year-old. That was the year Jamie Gold won.
Huh.
Yeah, so
06.
Unless you were playing the main on a fake ID, but I doubt it.
Yeah. So it was probably 7. It was probably 07.
Yeah.
I was never playing the main.
That'd be kind of crazy.
Yeah.
A little different than the boat.
That would be stupid. All right, sir. Let's cash you out. Can we have your ID, please?
You were talking before about the F-tops that kind of changed your trajectory. The F-tops win.
Yeah, so I mean, I was always up and down with the role. Like, I was almost at 100K and broke at least two or three times. And I never had the bankroll management. But this one regular at my casino would always go, "Matthew, what's the most important thing about poker?" And I'm like, "Skill." He's like, no. "Bankroll management." And he would just always say that to me. I still remember him saying that. Lenny. Shout out Lenny.
Took you a while to listen to Lenny.
Yeah, no, I never really listened. I mean, maybe I did listen, but I don't want to give him the credit. No way. So I would always just get money, go broke. I remember one time I went to LAPC, and I had like 8K to my name. I took it all to California. And I wanted to play the main the next day. It was a 10K buy-in. So I said, all right, well, let's put my 8K, or let's put like my money on a 10-20 table at the Commerce, you know, and sit down. I sat down. I'm just getting hit with a deck. I'm up to like 10K maybe. And then I see a seat open at 20-40.
Wow.
So I'm like, yeah, why not? Let's sit 20-40. I end up like three betting a guy with 7-8 suited, make quads, and just shove all in. And the guy calls me, so I all of a sudden have like 22,000 in front of me. And I'm just like, oh, man. All right, I got my buy-in, and I have more money after I buy in. Anyways, like, this is great. And I'm like, but I can't just get up because then everyone's going to see I hit and run. And I play I play cash here all the time. Like, I used to spend weeks on end living in the Commerce playing cash. Like, I used to love cash. And So I just sat there and I pretty much folded for like a couple hours.
Just paying your blinds just to get out of it.
Yeah, I remember I even like threw a guy 100 or something, like, because I bad beat him in a pot. And I'm like, why am I giving a guy 100? Like, you made money, but don't throw a guy 100. So then I kept getting more hands though. So I was like winning even more money. And then I cashed out, and I was, funny enough, like, you couldn't get a room at Commerce back then. If you called a year ahead of time and then you tried to check in, they'd be like, "We lost your reservation," and mm-hmm. they'd give rooms to someone that slipped the guy $500.
Yes,
and
this he'd was give a, you a room. Huge problem at Commerce.
It was such
a
big deal. And then I ended up slipping a lady behind the desk 100, and she's like, "Oh, well, someone just checked out of the room. Why don't you go take that one?" And we're like, "Nice." And Alex Jacob was there. We were still pretty close back then, and so we roomed together. Mm-hmm. So, I remember I was staying with Alex, and then I just bought into the main for 10K. And third level, I bluffed off 80% of my stack to James Van Alstyne and just doubled him up. So now all of a sudden, like, I'm in the LAPC main. You started with 20K chips back then. And I just have 2K now, 100, 200, and I'm just, like, hating life.
Yeah.
But I battled it up, and I ended up bagging, like 20K. On the day, and I was like so happy.
Yeah,
it's always funny because like you talk about like moods at the table, and if some guy had 100K and now he's down to 50, he's steaming. But if a guy has 3K and he's up to 8K, he's way happier than the guy with 50. And it's just like funny how you think about it that way.
Well, that was one of the lessons I still remember hearing Greg Raymer say, of all people.
Oh, really?
He was saying that when you take a bad beat, you just trick your brain into thinking that you doubled up to that amount. You just got to lie to yourself.
There
and
you
like,
go.
I didn't lose half my stack. I just doubled up from a severe short start. Now I'm feeling good and positive. And it's a, I don't know. It works for some people.
Yeah, it's crazy how that works. Day two, I got it in Jack's Ace 10, like first level, and busted. And, you know, that was my LAPC. But
yeah,
like I said, up and down, busted the roll many times. And it wasn't until one day that I actually said, all right, you know, if I want to play poker for a living, like, I gotta take this thing seriously. I gotta have this organized. I gotta be playing stuff within my bankroll. So I had maybe like 10K to my name, and I asked my friend Stu Patterson, who was a Full Tilt pro back then. He's a Florida guy. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Yo, Stu, can you send me some money on Full Tilt? Like, I'm gonna try to play." He sent me like $1,000, $2,000 or something like that. And I just started playing like the $75 buy-in. I think they were like, it was a $75 buy-in, 45-man sit-and-go, so it was like five tables, and they would pay like top four spots maybe. and I just like won two of those. Like my first week, I was probably up. I was already up to 1,000, and I had like another 1,500 in my account, and I was all happy, like sitting at my parents' dining room table, like just playing on the computer, like a job. And then I was so happy that like I was winning in these that I decided to play like the 30 cubed one day during FTOPS.
Okay.
So it was a $30 buy-in with one rebuy and one add-on. So it was like a $90 tournament. And I ended up winning it for like $7,000. And then my friend told me like, hey, why don't you play the FTOPS? There's a $200 turbo tonight. And I was just like, well, no, I can't. I'm not doing that. Like, I told myself I wasn't going to risk all the money in FTOPS. He's like, yeah, but you won 7K. Like, just take one shot. So I was just like.
So easily convincible.
I was just like, you know what? All right, whatever. I swapped 5% with him. And I played the FTOPS turbo, bluffed off half my chips the first hand, was down to 1,000. He started with 2,000. And then I just played crazy out of my mind. And then 3 hours later, I won the FTOPS. I just completely like ran over the whole table and obviously got really, really lucky. To win a turbo, you have to just win a lot of flips. So, I was making good calls, and before you know it, I got 100K now. I have 100K in my Full Tilt account, and I'm just like going crazy. I'm like, I run into my parents' room at like midnight, and I'm just like, Mom, Dad, I won the gold jersey. They're like, what are you talking
What's
about?
What's a gold jersey? They're I like, got my own avatar now.
Yeah, they're like, we're sleeping. Like, leave me alone. I'm like, no, $100,000. It's real money. And they're just like, yeah, that's good. Whatever. I'm like, what? How rich am I? Are my parents rich or something? Like, did I not know about this? Like, what's going on? Like, I just had no idea. I'm like, what? Why aren't they, like, popping a bottle of champagne? I didn't get it. And they're like, yeah, that's great. Good job. We're going to sleep. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So then I went out and partied till like 6 in the morning. I remember getting a flat tire that day, that night. And I was like 8 in the morning. I'm like, why did I party? Like, I'm just sitting there waiting for AAA. But yeah, so I ran that up. And then I took 20K out to Vegas that summer. I think it was 2009. And, I just had my ups and downs. And I was up 5K going into the second to last event of the summer, which was the 5K 6-max.
Perfect. Put all the profit in.
And I was like, you know what? Great. I can go home with 10K no matter what. I'm going to put 5K into this tournament. I'm going to put 10K into the main. And it's a good summer. If I lose only 10K, like, I'm happy. Like, I was out here all summer. I paid for all my expenses. I paid for all my food.
Mm-hmm.
So I play the 5K 6-max. I remember my starting table had Matt Graham on my left. You know Matt G?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't play anymore. And T-May actually was playing too.
Tim West?
Yep. And these were like two online guys, and they were all like confident. And I was just sitting there with like my stupid Prada sunglasses. I don't know what the hell I was doing back then. And
was this long-haired Matt or?
No. Long-haired Matt was like a couple years ago.
Okay.
This is...
I can't remember what the different stages of your hair.
So anyways, I just remember getting to a being the first one to get to a million chips in this tournament. The final table was like, Matt Horalenko won it. He was like
Haas.
Haas like
TBF.
He was a big limit guy.
Let's see, he had Josh Brickus number 2.
Yep, Josh Brickus was there. Faraz Jaka.
The Toilet was number 3. Yeah,
and I remember watching Faraz play, and he was just crazy. I was like, this guy is doing some insane moves. He was like raising off huge chips. People are shoving on him, and he just like insta folds. I'm like, how could he just be doing this? Like, what is he doing? Like, I had no idea. But it was like really exciting to watch him play because he was like really fun. Like, he was making moves. Everyone else was just like folding. Like, Brickus just like was waiting for kings, waking up with them, and just winning massive pots. Like, Faraz is just like in there battling. Like, it was cool to see.
I think that was his year where he went kind of crazy on the tour. With WPT events as well.
Did he?
Let's see here. You finished 6th in that for 138,000. So hey, you're off and running again.
Yeah.
You got an online bankroll. You got a live bankroll.
Yeah. So now I'm like over 200K in my bankroll. I'm free rolling the main, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up actually cashing the main too. I think a Bilzerian busted me that year. Actually, like I shoved like jacks, and he like tanked it with ace king or something. And I was like, what is he taking so long for? Like, it's an easy call. Like, just
Dan or Adam?
I think it was Adam.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure.
One of them doesn't play tournaments anymore, I believe. But
yeah, this was back in 2009.
Yeah. So fast forward a couple years.
Wait. Let's stay in 2009 real quick. So I go home and I go back to the online thing, but my Full Tilt account got frozen.
Okay.
Because I was accused of multi-accounting.
Why? Because they were like, he's too good?
Well, my name was Big Stack BBQ because I would always just get all the chips and then like bluff them off and lose them. So I thought like barbecue, Big Stack, it was a funny name. But they're like, hey, we have this other name that you're registered under called Polygraph, P-O-L-I-G-R-A-P-H. And I was just thinking to myself, like, what? I don't remember this, but it, actually in college, back at FSU, when I was like 18 in the dorms, I made a Full Tilt account and I played like 3 tournaments on it.
Yeah.
Stopped playing for years, and then I made a new Full Tilt account like when I was 25 or so. I don't even know. It was a really long time later. So they just froze $100,000 before the summer when I went out to Vegas. So I called up Stu, my buddy that was a Full Tilt Red Pro, and he talked to the right people, and I was like, yeah, I'm not multi-counting.
Clearly it's not multi-counting.
Right. It was years later, and I was never doing it. But they're like, yeah, well, that's fine. We just got to switch all of your funds to your old name, Polygraph. And I was like, okay, you realize I have over 1,000 tournaments played on this Big Stack BBQ, and no one knows who Polygraph is. So by doing this, you're actually...
helping me.
You're making me multi-account. You realize that you're actually making me do that.
You're also disguising my skill to all of my opponents.
Sure. but they didn't care, and they took away my gold jersey.
Oh.
So I was devastated because that actually meant something to me. I don't know why. Anyways, summer happens. Good final table, comeback, the next FTOPS comes around, and I like remember making some stupid Facebook post like I'm gonna get my gold jersey back, and then I just sign up for like 20 tournaments. I'm ready to go. And I can't even play that many tables at once. Like I'm not an online guy. I never have been. And like, I like to play like every hand. So like having a lot of tables, like kind of is tough for me. But, I basically bust every tournament. I'm getting unlucky. I'm so frustrated. So I just go in, I unregister for everything, and I get to the main event and I'm just like, all right, well, I can't unregister the main. That's just stupid. So I leave it open. And then I just go to the gym and play basketball, completely lose track of time, and don't get home until an hour after the tournament's already been going.
So you're blinding out?
Yeah. So I had 6,900 chips left of 7,500, which isn't a big deal. And I just go absolutely insane. And I'm up to like 20K. My friend texts me. He's like, yo, I got 40. He's like, no. He goes, yo, I got 15K. I had 20. And he's like, I'll give you 2% of me for 1% of you. And I was like, that's probably not a good deal for you, but okay.
Yeah.
She goes, nice. So then, you know, 8 hours later, it's 7 a.m. My mom comes into the kitchen. I was still living with my parents. And she's like, honey, you're still up? I'm like, yeah, I'm playing the main event. She's like, oh, that's great. She's like, how you doing? I'm like, I'm at the final table. There's 6 left. First place is 450 grand. She's like, that's nice. I'm like, what?
Your parents could not care at all, no matter what.
They cared, but for some reason, they weren't as excited about it as I was. So
maybe they were like, maybe it's like when your pitcher is throwing a no-hitter and you don't want to mess with them, and you're just like, okay, I just don't want to mess with Matt's confidence.
I would love to give my parents that much credit, but I don't think it's the case. So then I ended up winning that final table for 450. So like, ironically, the live guy that's played all live and had terrible bankroll management just...
yeah.
Gets his whole entire role online. And now all of a sudden, I'm just like, let's go. Let me play every WPT main event. I'm in everything. Like, I'm going to try to win player of the year. I want to show everybody how good of a poker player I am. Because I was much more driven to, like, be acknowledged for being a great player back then. It was important for me to, like, have my peers respect me and think that I was really, really good. So now I had the role, and I was just traveling all the stops, going to Aruba, going to LA, going to Tunica, like just all over.
Yeah, you won a circuit main event at AC. You had a few scores in 2011, including a final table at the World Series of Poker in Omaha, 8 or better.
Yep. I got 3rd in that thing.
But before that run in 2011, your dad saved you from Black Friday, right?
Oh, yeah, that's funny. Yeah, my parents are very cautious humans. You know, they're very, very practical in a lot of senses, and I'm lucky to have that kind of influence.
As evidenced by them not caring about your
I'm very lucky to have that kind of influence
scores.
In my life. Yeah, so my dad's like, how much money do you have online? I'm like, oh, and, you know, like 500K, no big deal. And he's just like, it's on the internet, like, what? Get it off. And I'm like, Dad, if I take it all off, I gotta just pay all the taxes on it. Like, it's gonna kill me.
Yeah,
because like I had to pay like 200K in taxes, which was insane. He's like, no, I don't care. Take it all off. Like, you have to get it off the internet. Like, you can't leave it on there. Are you insane? And I'm like, Dad, it's guaranteed. It's Full Tilt. They're a very respectable brand. Like, nothing's going to happen. And he's like, I don't care. Take the money off. And I'm like, all right, whatever. So mm-hmm. I ended up just doing a massive bank transfer. And then I just paid all the taxes on it. Like, I've, you know, just you're welcome, government. And and yeah, sure enough, like a couple months later, like all the money froze. I had like $2,000 on Full Tilt and $2,000 on Stars, and like everyone else is just kind of panicking. I'm like, eh,
thanks, Dad.
Yeah, looks like my parents finally paid off.
Yeah,
usually they're just, you know, that voice of reason that you don't want to hear because it just makes your life inconvenient. But this time
it
was like,
this time it worked. You
know, yep, so only need one time.
So that meant you were properly rolled when you went to the WPT Grand Prix de Paris.
Yeah, that was cool. I booked a Europe trip with my friend Robbie. We just booked Barcelona, Paris. We were in Cannes, which was awesome. You know, I was like 27. How old was I 8 years ago? Yeah, like around 27, 26.
26, 27, yeah.
And I'm just traveling around Europe. Like, I'm in Cannes, like, you know, like just drinking a beer on whatever sea that is. What is it, the Mediterranean? I don't know. Who cares? But, like, yeah, I'm, like, I'm just, like, living it up. And obviously, like, you know, I'm very uncultured at that time. I don't realize now like how much gratitude I can have for being able to experience that at such a young age.
Right.
Because there's people that are like 50 years old right now. They're like, oh, I'm saving up and I'm going to make it to Europe one of these days. Like, it's going to be great. I'm going to go to London. You know, like everyone goes to London.
My wife is listening to this episode. She's gonna be triggered by that comment. She's always begging me to go on the trip. So I did the same thing. I traveled the world with poker and
yep.
She never got to go to – well, she got to go to some of them, but – she's always like, that's on my bucket list. And yeah. You were complaining about the lack of ice cubes. I'm like, yep. Typical American abroad.
It's really great because you get to see like a different culture, different food. People act differently. Mm-hmm. Like it's so different. And then the best part of all is like it's nice experiencing new things, but then you actually get some more gratitude for where you live.
Because yeah.
It's easy to complain about America, but when you come back here after – you've been on the road. Like, I was in Thailand for 9 weeks at the beginning of last year, and it was probably the best 9 weeks of my life, but the luxuries aren't really existent as much there as they are in the States, you know?
Like, yeah.
The roads are 70% the size, like, in width, and there's, like, five people on one little scooter. Like going a mom taking like three of her kids to school, they're like on their iPhones playing video games while they're like sitting spider style on this thing. It's like,
yeah, something that would get an American mom arrested.
Yeah, there's like no air conditioning, none of them are wearing helmets, like they're just driving, cutting in and out of traffic. Like, it's insane. And you just don't, like, we're in such a bubble in America that we don't really realize this. Mm-hmm. So it's cool getting to experience that, getting to see like the nature and the architecture and like just differences. And then it's also great coming home because then, like, you know, right when I sit behind my car and like I feel the, like, instead of some rental, and I'm just like, man, and I take this for granted. It's so easy because like everyone that's human, just whatever they get, they just accept.
Yeah,
and then
they
want more.
Yeah, you get acclimated to your situation.
Yeah,
and
it's really hard for us to just like look back and say, well, this is what I have, and realize how lucky they are. You know. Yeah.
At least I don't live in the desert or whatever.
You
know? You do. Although you go to the desert optionally for fun sometimes, I've seen. Well, WPT Grand Prix, you win a WPT championship.
Yeah.
$721,000. Does that change your life anymore? Or?
It was $700,000 after the bank transfer. They took $20,000 for their efforts.
Oh, okay.
Damn you, banks. But, yeah, no, that definitely changed my life. And it was actually really interesting because when I was broke, I would always just be daydreaming about the day that I would win one of these WPTs because, like, I used to watch the WPT when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. And just, like, watching all the players, like, season one. I had, like, the first three seasons on DVD. And I was always telling myself, like, yeah, I'm going to win one of these things and then I'm going to be set and my life's going to be great. And then I won it. And I was just like, well, what now? And, like, I was like, well, okay, so I'm a millionaire in my 20s for mm-hmm. the first time. And that's really cool. But I just felt empty. You know what I mean? I was like, well, okay, I don't know if I always thought poker was a means to an end, and I'm not trying to just like win every single tournament anymore. Like I'm set now, but like I was just like, well, what now? You know, I don't know what to do, and I just like was lacking this fulfillment. So I was just like, well, you know, I started to think a lot because poker players have lots of free time to just ponder their existence. I mean, not everyone does it, but I'm pretty what's the word I'm looking for?
You're searching for the meaning.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just
introspective.
Like, introspective, exactly. And I'm just like, what am I supposed to do now? You know? So like I was kind of just in a rut for 2012 and thinking to myself, like, let me find something I can do to maybe impact the world, maybe just like make a difference. You know, maybe I'm really thankful for what I've got. Like maybe I owe it to people that get born into a situation that they can overcome. Mm-hmm. Maybe I could help them somehow or I don't know. Like I was just kind of lost.
Do you feel like poker was selfish? Because I know a lot of players, especially smart players, struggle with the idea that poker doesn't really give back a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even think about it at the time. I was very selfish, but that's natural. Like I was just concerned with making money. I didn't have money. I needed money to survive.
Yeah.
You know, it's the people that don't have anything that give to others. Those are like the most amazing people in my opinion, because anyone can be a nice guy when they have a lot of money. You know, anyone can just, like, people always talk about, like, this rich guy at the table. They're like, oh, that guy is so great. Like, he's always in such a good mood. Yeah, I mean, he has billions of dollars. So, like, obviously, it's easy for him to be nice and tip a cocktail waitress a 20. Like, that's not hard to do. Like, he doesn't have to feed his family. He doesn't have to, like, pay his rent. Like, he doesn't have to know where that money's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the people that are in those situations who are able to give back, like, those are truly, like, the heroes of society, in my opinion.
So, I mean, it didn't affect your results too much, obviously, all this introspection. You finished second at Festa Lago for $273,000, and the next year you won a bracelet for $300,000. I mean, were you, like, was there a crisis in your head during this time when you're on
definitely.
On the circuit?
Yeah, for sure. I was definitely in a crisis. I actually went to Choice Center in 2012, referred by my friends Jeff Gross and Antonio Esfandiari,
mm-hmm.
and it was really interesting. You know, I didn't finish it, but and a lot.
This is what Daniel has made. Daniel Negreanu has popularized here in Vegas.
I did it before Daniel. I actually remember talking with him for a while before he went in, and he now swears by it. And it's true. It really could be a beneficial tool, and it's really going to open your eyes to a lot of things that you don't realize in life.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thankful to have experienced that. But ultimately, I just decided my level of involvement, I didn't want to be too attached to it because there was certain aspects of it that didn't exactly resonate with me. But that being said, I'll always, like, if somebody tells me they're struggling and with like some kind of perspective, I'll always refer them to Choice, and one of these days maybe one of them will actually go.
Well, I mean, a lot of poker players have used it and swear by it and said it changed their life, obviously Daniel being one of them.
For sure.
I have a few friends who went that route as well. But, you know, what was ultimately the solution for you? Are you still searching?
I'll let you know when I find it. I mean, ultimately the solution is that, like, you got to just rely on yourself.
Yeah.
You can't really expect anyone else to help you. If you want something, you need to know that you're the person that's going to get it. So,
that doesn't fill you with anxiety. That's a peace of mind thing.
Oh, no, it does fill me with anxiety, but it doesn't fill me with any resentment towards others for not holding up to their end of the bargain.
I see.
You got to pretty much take responsibility for everything in your life, even when you're like, there's no way this is my fault. It's still, you just still got to accept it as your responsibility because that's like the only healthy way to approach this and deal with things like that.
Can I ask you where you keep your bracelet?
Yeah, it's in a safety deposit box in the bank, so don't try to rob me. But
but like you don't display it or anything or bring it out at parties and flash it on.
No, I've actually never really worn it more than a second. I gave it to my grandma in New Jersey because she's like, that's the most amazing bracelet. And I'm over it. Like, I don't even care. And I was like, Grams, I want you to have my bracelet. Just hold it. And she held it for like a couple months and she's like, this is too expensive. I don't want this in here anymore. Take it from me. Like, it's giving me stress. I'm like, okay, I'm sorry, Grandma. I thought you'd like it.
Sorry about the burden.
I was like, if someone steals it, I won't be mad. I promise. But yeah, so I gave it to her for a while, and then, but now it's in a safety deposit box.
What did it feel like to take to win a World Series event, or was it just another $300,000 in your bankroll?
At the time, winning that World Series event was the greatest achievement I've ever felt in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I came into a really, really tough final table. I think Brent Hanks was there, Jason Kuhn, Amit Makhija, and I ended up playing Eric Baldwin heads up for 7 hours straight. And Eric just won. Eric just won Card Player's Player of the Year, I believe. Did he win it in 2011?
He did win it. Yes.
Yeah. So he would just won it, and I've always been really friendly with him, and just thought he was like a really, really nice guy. And we played 7 hours heads up, and I remember saying to him like, "Yo, Eric, you want to just skip breaks? Like, let's just get this thing done, man." And we just thought the tournament would be done in like 2 hours, let alone we played 7 hours.
Yeah.
And we took like two breaks.
I remember they hid you guys in the corner because there was so much going on that day.
And we had the rail was insane. Mm-hmm. Every single person I knew from Florida, all my friends, like people that I was back in, people that I, you know, like everybody like was there. Just sweating.
Yeah.
I remember Mercier, who's one of my really close friends, was just on the rail, like, with his laptop, like, doing stuff on his laptop, sitting next to my buddy Donnie Peters, and they were just, like, watching the table, and I was just like, you guys don't have to watch. Like, it's not a big deal. But, like, no, and we just played 7 hours straight. We didn't take any breaks, except for, like, to go to the bathroom a couple times, and I've never been so physically exhausted or mentally exhausted in my life.
Yeah.
Like, my brain was just, like, short-circuiting, like it wasn't working. So it was quite the experience, and Eric is just like a beast, you know, like he was just playing the whole time, and we just must have changed the chip lead like 15 times. I think the short stack doubled up like over 10 times.
I must say, like, when you get there, you're pretty good at closing. It feels like when you get to the top three, you're going to win most times.
I don't get there often, but when I do, I finish it. Yeah.
Is that attributed to some part of your game, a playing style that you have, or is it just...
Yeah, that's also why I don't make too many tables, because I'm always just trying to win the tournament, like, every hand.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I've been changing lately and just trying to just go deep more. But yeah, in the past, like, pretty much every final table that I make... If I'm getting there, I want to take home the trophy.
Last tournament I want to talk about came last year. You bought into this World Poker Tour Tournament of Champions event, not an event that every past champion participates in,
mm-hmm.
because it's full of nothing but WPT winners, and you managed to take it down for your second title, another $463,000.
I don't like counting that as a title because it's a closed event. But, I mean, if you want to say second title, sure.
I'm going to say second title. You beat nothing but WPT winners for it, so.
Yeah, it was a really tough final table, too.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, Darren Elias was there. Yeah, everyone was rooting for him.
Were they?
Well, I'm just saying, for him to make history, going for number five, I think.
I wasn't rooting for him. yeah, Darren was there. I had Nick Schulman on my left. Mm-hmm. Mata Symbolas has been doing really well.
Yeah, he just finished... second in the WPT.
Yeah, and you know who LAPC? Got third in that one? Darren Elias,
there you go.
So David Baker is not the first person to knock Darren out in third and Madison second in the WPT. It's crazy that they finished like that, too. And he, like, had the same exact position. He had position on Darren and Madison's on his left.
Oh, it's like deja vu for him.
Yeah, which is really advantageous because Darren's going to be playing more pots and Madison's, like, pretty much folding a good amount.
Yeah.
So you definitely want to have, like, I was really lucky to get that position at the table. Because Darren was giving me the most trouble probably of anyone in the tournament, and I just got to act after him for 4 out of 5 hands.
Yeah. So what did it feel like taking that one down? Where does that one rank in your list of achievements?
Yeah, I mean, it's all great. You know, it was really cool to see that, like, I haven't even been watching poker, to be honest with you, lately, like, or playing or thinking about it. It just hasn't been in my mind.
Well, I remember you saying after you won that it was – not unexpected, but like...
Well, I started watching some WPTs like the week before because I'm like, well, I'm playing a 15K buy-in with all these great players. Like, let me see what people are doing these days because I haven't really been playing at all. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure the game has changed a bit because, like, every time that I play live, I just feel, like, so out of it. Like, I don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I was watching the table, And I just said to myself, like, these guys aren't doing anything different. Like, I understand everything that they're doing, and I'm not surprised at all. Like, maybe I've just been giving people too much credit this whole time. And then I just played the WPT, got a terrible C draw day one. Eric Seidel was on my immediate left, and I think he's just maybe the best. Like, he's so good at poker.
He went deep in that too, didn't he?
No, I think he busted day two.
Maybe I'm thinking of the tournament right before it.
Yeah, he might have, did he make the money? I don't know. I think he came up short of the money. But yeah, so I was just kind of playing tight, and then I ended up getting real lucky on Danny Elahi. He had two kings and three bet way too small, and I peeled with like two small cards and hit two pair and just ended up busting him and got some nice chips to go into day two with. And yeah, you know, the next thing you know, I'm winning a WPT title. And
your words, not mine.
Half of a WPT title. And then I ended up calling my parents right after to let them know. And I was like, hey, I won it. And they're just like, you won what? And because I haven't been updating on social media or anything like that. And I don't like telling my parents when I'm playing tournaments because now, like, my dad, like, is on the computer refreshing it constantly. It just takes up his whole day and he's getting stressed out over it.
Yes.
Just like, it's better if they don't know and I'll just let them know afterwards. So I just tell him I won. He's like, oh, the Tournament of Champions? I'm like, yeah, I won. I got first, Dad. And he's like, really? He's like, I thought that thing was last week. And I was like, no, that was another WPT. The guy that got third won it, actually. His name is Darren. And he's just like, oh, well, that's great, Maddie. Good job. And I'm like, thanks, Dad. You know.
So chill about your accomplishments. I guess that keeps you even keeled, though.
No, he was excited. Don't get me wrong. My parents are very proud of me, and they're really excited.
You said that you were, you know, obviously not focusing on poker leading up to that. Did that have anything to do with what happened in Parkland?
Oof.
We don't have to talk about it if you don't want to.
No, we could talk about it. I wasn't expecting that.
I just figured the timeline makes a little bit of sense.
No, it was actually interesting. I was in Thailand when that happened.
Because for those who don't know, you went to Marjorie Stoneman Douglas.
I went to Stoneman Douglas.
The high school that...
On Valentine's Day, there was a big shooting there, and a lot of kids lost their lives.
I was affected having been on that campus once for a wrestling meet, like, years really? Ago. You know what I mean? I was like, I've been there.
Yeah, it was crazy because, like, you see a shooting in the news and you just think to yourself, like, oh, yeah, that's terrible. 5 minutes later, you're going on with your day.
Yeah.
But now I'm actually visualizing the halls that I used to go – that I was in school. And it really just – it's just quite a shock. Like, I didn't even know how to feel about it, you know, because, like, I didn't know any of the kids personally. I have friends whose kids are in that school now.
Yeah.
And luckily they were all okay, but – it's just a terrible thing, man. Like, everyone blames it on guns, but I think mental health is definitely the problem. Mm-hmm. And kids can be mean in school, you know? So, like, and some kids go through, like, a lot of crap at home that shapes them into becoming monsters, you know? And I feel like it's important to support people like this to avoid these things. And, yeah, obviously take away guns, but I'm just... I think that we're overemphasizing that.
Treat it early.
But yeah, I used to walk to this school. Like, it was a mile from my house, and I loved this school. You know, I have great memories there. That's where I was playing cards. That's where I was skipping study hall to go to the casino. Like, this is my school, and just seeing this happen, it just really just. Spin me for a loop, and I'm literally, I couldn't be further in the world away from my school at this time. Like, I was actually signed up to go do a yoga teacher training, because I've been, like, diving into, like, spirituality and just, like, meditation and things like that, because poker can take a toll on your brain, and I've really found a lot of value in developing a yoga practice, and I was in Thailand visiting a friend of mine who from Florida, staying with him. Then I went to Koh Samui, and then I was going to a yoga training, but I was, like, literally thinking about just flying home, because everyone in my school was, like, going to this big march in Washington, March for Our Lives, I think it was called, and I was in, like, a Facebook group, and
this
I was
the, like, David Hogg led rally.
Yeah, sure. And I was like writing letters and stuff from Thailand to send to like a kid that, at my school so that they can read it, like saying like, hey, you're like, I'm here for you, or mm-hmm. something, like just trying to support them and let them know, like, I can't like, this was awful for me, but I can't imagine like what this is like for like a kid in that school that like could have lost their lives and has friends of theirs pass away over something like
anybody
this.
Anybody who's reading the news this week knows that it's still affecting people, you know, to this day. So
yeah, it's truly awful for people to have this type of fear instilled into them over things like this. And I just felt like helpless. I didn't know what to do. And it was like, it really crushed me. Like, I remember just going into some hole in the wall. I was in Pattaya City, Thailand, and I was just getting some food. And I'm sitting in this like little restaurant by myself. And then like four like British guys, like old British guys, walk in and sit at the table next to me, and they're just having fun talking at dinner. And it's just me, them, and like the servers that are these Thai people that are serving us. And I just overhear them talking like, yeah, did you hear about the shooting in Florida? Yeah, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, the school, like the terrible, terrible. And I'm just like sitting there like
and
one person.
And it's a casual conversation to them, yeah.
And I'm sitting there and I'm just like, oh my God, like people, literally, you couldn't be further away from my school in the world. And they're talking about this terrible thing that happened at the place I grew up. My parents, I'm talking to them, and they're saying, yeah, CNN is here. There's like cops everywhere. There's all these news trucks. Like, we can't even drive anywhere. There's helicopters everywhere. Like, the whole city's just going crazy. And I was actually there last Valentine's Day visiting my parents and driving by, and they just had a massive thing at the local park where all the family members and students like went to do like a remembrance type of thing. Yeah. So like it made some serious waves in this community. And like, I mean, I come from like a pretty entitled place in Parkland. Like, there's a lot of well-off kids. So like, obviously, like they have like the type of parents that are like the ones nagging teachers to get their kids in like a gifted program, like that kind of thing. So that being said, like, as soon as something like this happens at my school, like, these kind of kids like aren't going to take no for an answer, you mm-hmm. know? So like, they're really just get going after it and making some serious waves with policy.
Yeah, it seems like they're being heard as opposed to some of the other school situations, shooting situations out there where people kind of had a short memory.
Yeah, it's 'cause they're privileged, you know, and they can do that. But I mean, I guess if I could take anything positive from this, it's like a reminder of gratitude for my circumstances, you know.
Yeah.
But I have mixed feelings about the whole thing. Like, I can't help but feel like most of my beliefs are pretty democratic, you know, like liberal beliefs. But I just feel like they're using like these kids like to really push an agenda, like against the NRA and stuff like that. And I don't know how to feel about it. You know, I don't even watch the news, to be honest with you. I can't stand being lied to. And I just feel like, you know, poker articles that I read on me and my friends aren't even that accurate, like, let alone like big news events on mm-hmm. on things like that. Like, I just don't want to be misinformed. So I'd rather just like get the cliff notes and then move on with my day. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, on a lighter note, we end the podcast with some rapid fire questions if you're ready to go.
Oh boy.
Let's start with the biggest pot you've ever won or lost. Your choice. Cash or equity?
I could come up with a few, but I'll tell you the one that probably the one in commerce that I was talking about earlier when I had like quad eights and I just ripped it all in for like over 10K and got called. That was a really big pot for me at the time, and I just it was cool because like I was acting like it wasn't a big deal. You know, when you're a pro, you want to always act mm-hmm. like it's not a big deal.
Yeah, I've done this before.
You're just like, yeah, I'm one dragon, 25K pot. Like, this is all the money that I own, like, in front of me in chips on the table right now. But, yeah, no big deal. I'm a pro.
I need to
like,
go to the bathroom and fist pump 50 times. Give me a second.
Let me just take 5K off the table when no one's looking. No, I did not do that. But, yeah, so that was a big pot for me. And then I lost a big one. I don't want to talk about losses. I'm not that guy.
All right, yeah, keep it positive. Best swap or piece you've ever had of anybody?
Ooh.
Has somebody come through for you?
Yeah, I think the best swap that I ever had was the PCA. I got 10th in it. Mike Watson ended up winning, but he chopped it with Tony Gregg. And I ended up swapping 5% with Tony Gregg, like day four or day five. Yeah, Tony is just such a great player and a great guy. So it was a nice little swap for me. I think he ended up giving me like 50K or something.
It's a nice nice little bonus on top of your 10th place.
Yeah.
So it's like, sorry you didn't make the final table. Here's 50 grand for your trouble.
Yeah, at least I swapped with Tony, you know, coming through.
Who's the best player we've never heard of?
The best player we've never heard of?
Or just somebody who doesn't get all the love that they should. Any Florida guys who should get more attention, or anybody from your travels? Man, he's really racking his brain here.
I don't have that much experience with this guy, but I've recently become a big fan of his game. I'm going to say Max Young.
Okay.
Have you heard of him?
Max Young won one of our Card Player Poker Tour events at Choctaw, I want to say, back in the day.
I played with him in the Aussie Millions last year, and his table presence was impressive, and he was really mixing it up. I like seeing a guy that's playing a lot of pots and playing well, so I'm gonna give Max a little shout-out.
Yeah, those are my favorite type of poker players, where the VPIP is like 80, and they're still managing to get deep. You know it's going to be a fast final table. Your worst job before poker. You mentioned a few of them, right?
My worst job. Okay. Here's a good one. This is actually the last job I had.
This isn't soccer referee, right?
No, that was one of the best jobs I ever had, man. I loved it. I was, I don't want to say telemarketer.
Oh, man, this sounds bad already.
But you know, like, timeshares, how they have, like, the tours? Well, I didn't sell the timeshares. When somebody would, like, rent a car from, like, Avis or, like, Hertz or something like – or, like, just one of our quote-unquote sister companies, after they were done, they're like, would you like us to connect you for a chance to get a vacation? But you can't say free. It's like an all-expenses-paid vacation. You can never say the word free, though. They're like, do not say free. You're not allowed to say free. and I would just sit there, and I would have to read a script on a computer, and they were like, you cannot – go off the script. You have to read the script. And I'm like, listen, if you let me just talk to the person, I can probably get them to take a vacation. And it's there was different spots. Like, you could even do a cruise. And, like, as long as they went to see the timeshares and completed the full, like, hour or two tour, then they end up, like, paying for them or, like, giving them vouchers to pay for their stay at the hotel. And it was all centrally located. They're like, am I on the strip? And I'm like, like, for Vegas, like, am I on the strip? I'm like, no, nah, you're centrally located. So you're near the strip, but no, you're not on the strip, you know?
Yeah.
So, like,
at a motel 3 miles from the strip.
Yeah. I had to do this thing. I think I just graduated college, or I was still in college. And I was just like, oh, man. And I just go to them. I won like $500 playing like cash at the casino one night. And I was just like, 500 is enough for me. Like, I quit. Like, I just walked in, and I'm like, I'm out of here. And then she's like, no, you have so much potential. Please, you have to stay. And I'm just like, No. I can't be here. This is not
for me. It's soul-sucking.
It's the
worst.
Tricking
people into sitting through timeshare presentations.
Yeah, well, this wasn't exactly telemarketing, because at least people were, like, getting sent to my phone. It wasn't me calling them.
Yeah.
So, like, I wasn't that upset with it, but now I just, like, I feel like telemarketers are the mosquitoes of the world. You know, just there's no use for them.
Sorry to all my telemarketer listeners.
Yeah, you're better than this. You can do better than this.
Favorite tournament destination? You've been to all of them at this point, right?
I haven't been to all of them, but I think that my favorite one, which I've only been to once, is Montreal.
Okay.
Amazing city. There's like...
You just like playground too?
Yeah, playground's great. It's like really far. It's like 20 to 30 minutes, depending on traffic, from like the center of Montreal. But the city of Montreal is amazing. The people, incredibly nice. And I love Paris. Obviously, I'm a little biased because I won the WPT there. But like, just the art and the food in Paris is incredible. But the people are awful humans. Like, French people...
I thought you were going to say there's a language barrier. You're like, no, awful humans.
Well, they act like there's...
Don't worry. I don't have a big French audience.
They all speak perfect English, but if you go up to them, you go... You have to be like, excusez-moi, monsieur, parlez-vous anglais? And then, like, maybe they'll be nice. But if you're like,
that's,
hey,
good,
you speak English? And they're just like, no.
Yeah.
So they're, like, very rude. But interestingly enough, like all the French poker players that I know are like nicest guys in the world. But like just random people in
Paris. They've traveled.
Yeah, maybe.
They have that world perspective.
Or maybe like just because you know them. Like I guess if you went over a French person, like it's extra, it's pretty nice just being able to have that. But yeah, what I was going to say is Montreal, it's like, it's not quite as like
French.
Artistically elevated as Paris, but it's got like, it's got kind of that vibe. And the people are extremely nice also.
Of course they are. They're Canadians. My second biggest audience.
Yeah. I love Canada.
All right. Headphones on at the table, yes or no? And if so, what are you listening to?
So lately I haven't been using headphones, but I'll do it if I'm feeling myself get a little bit tilted. I'll put the headphones on and just kind of try to center myself. Mm-hmm. Like I've been working with a lot of meditative type things and conditioning with my mind to keep me from being on tilt. And believe me, yesterday I had a really easy hand.
I read the hand.
The Ace King.
I read the hand. It was earlier in the day, yeah. And it was for heaps.
This guy opened a 30, and some guy shoved 647. This guy opened a 30 on the button. This guy shoved 647K from a small blind.
Queen 8 or something?
Queen 8 offsuit.
Yeah.
And it runs out King, Queen, X, X, Queen.
Yeah.
And then the guy just jumps up. Yes! Running around, going crazy. This guy is like...
This was like level 3 of the second day.
He's a hobbyist, for sure. Yeah. But and then the thing that tilted me more than this is as we're all in for this huge pot, this a cocktail waitress comes over, and she's just going, water, 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 and she's literally in my ear.
No situational awareness.
We're sitting there playing a massive pot, and I just hear this – nothing against Asians, but this Asian cocktail woman just going, water, like in my ear, like flop, water, turn, water, river, water. And then this guy's running around, and then she's asking water, and I just go, no. I do not want a water. I have a thermos full. I didn't say this. I had a thermos full of water. I'm just like, no, I don't want a water. Like, I want to say to her, like, you know what? I'm quenched for the day. Just yeah. Don't even... come here. She kept coming back though, right to me and just going, what? But I obviously she didn't know I was tilted at her.
Yeah.
But my table kind of knew. So they were kind of just trying to mess with me, being like, cocktails, like every time I was in a hand to get her over. But it didn't faze me one bit. I was actually like, I was just like, wow, I feel happy. I had a million. I only have 400K now, but you know what? I'm good.
There's that mindfulness.
Yeah.
Working on that
I've
tilt.
Been working on some little tricks. I don't want to share them, but it's been helping me out a lot to stay composed and, mm-hmm. and not tilt off my chips in tournaments, which is definitely my biggest leak, just taking things personal and being an idiot. And just
yeah,
like,
you could have missed the money or something crazy. Well, not missed the money, but you could have, you know, gone off shortly after. Instead, you
right.
was last another 40 spots or something.
I got back over a million soon after that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I put it together and – I was really happy with the way I played up until I think I messed up two hands. But it was weird because I knew exactly what my opponents had. I bet hoping they would fold, thinking they would, and they called with the exact hands I thought they had. So I was just like, all right, maybe I could do a better job of understanding what my opponents are going to do, not yeah. only what they have, but what they're going to do with what they have. So, but yeah, I mean, all in all, I'm happy with the tournament. And it's always nice to make a run in a WPT. It's always very disappointing to not win it.
Who's the best human being you've ever met in the poker world?
I mean, one of my – I don't know. I don't want to say like – it's hard to say best human being.
Favorite.
You know, people have like – I'm a fond believer like people that aren't well-liked, I find reasons to like them lately. Like and people always have – lots of great qualities and you know, there's just so many different types of intelligences that someone can have. So you can definitely appreciate lots of different things about people.
Okay.
But lately, one of the poker guys that I've been hanging out with the most is Lucky Chewy, Andrew Lichtenberger.
He's been on this podcast.
He is
espousing his positive vibes. And
he is the greatest. he is one of my favorite humans. And it's always just great energy with him, always really interesting conversations and, like, you know, like hikes and just, like, food. Like, he's my kind of person. And we're actually – I'm going to I'm going to do a little shout out to the Good Vibe Tribe.
Okay. You got a team.
He literally just made it up like 2 weeks ago. He's like, yo, Good Vibe Tribe. Like that's our squad. Like let's do it. And I'm like, I'm in, Chewy. Let's do it, yeah. Baby. GBT. So
yeah, I remember when talking to him, getting the sense that he was plugged into something else, and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. He's a very mindful person. Definitely an interesting guy.
What is a talent you don't have that you wish you did have? Doesn't have to be poker related, just any talent.
Oh, that's a good question. Sales.
Sales?
I wish that I was better at, or maybe not even sales. I wish I was better at leading. You know, like being able to motivate people and draw them into to support me and whatever endeavor, or vice versa, like just having that sort of connection.
You want to be a Pied Piper.
A Pied Piper, yeah. I don't know about that, but yeah, just being able to – I'm starting a company in poker, and it definitely is going to require a lot of leadership, and that's something that I've been struggling with. So I'm trying to figure out how to better do that.
Be the boss man.
Yeah.
Well, favorite movie?
I mean, I got so many favorite movies. My go-to is usually Big Lebowski, but No Country for Old Men is also – I like the Coen brothers a lot.
Call it. Oh, Frendo.
And then but also The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Nolan's Dark Knight. That's got to be one of the best movies of all time. Ledger was just an absolute – monster in that movie, like his acting. Like I remember watching the movie, and then like 2 hours into the movie, I just go, "Wait, is that Heath Ledger?" Like I literally didn't even know.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and it was so, like I was watching this movie, and just like,
that's a movie I won't turn off if it comes on TV.
It's too good.
I'm just, I'm just watching this now for the next 2 hours.
Yeah, it's too
three
good.
With commercials. Favorite album?
Ooh.
These are new questions. You're getting three new questions that I haven't asked before.
My favorite album, maybe Crash, Dave okay. Matthews. But I also, when I was a kid, Notorious B.I.G. Life After Death.
Those are two very different albums.
Yeah, and technically that's two albums, but disc one and disc two. But yeah, I've always had like a pretty what's the word, eclectic
that is
music
the word.
Taste. Yeah. I'm more into, to like alt rock these days, you know, I like Jimmy Eat World.
That's my favorite band of all time.
No way.
Jimmy Eat World is my favorite band of all time.
Yeah. I'm a big,
but my other top five are like not even close to Jimmy Eat World. They're nothing like, it's like the Chili Peppers.
I was going to say Red Hot.
Really? Yeah, and they're nothing like each other.
Yeah, I know. No, Jimmy Eat World, Red Hot, and Dave are usually like my three.
Dave was my college band, but you know, yeah. They became
so mainstream that like
now, if they became a punchline, that was the problem. Yeah. Everyone was like, oh, you just like the jam bands? You
know? I mean, I've seen them 10 times probably. Yeah. And
they Under always, the Tree and Dreaming, I think that was the album that I was that got into them.
That was a good album. It was a great album.
Temper Trap was my third band. I really liked them. But that's crazy. Yeah, Jimmy, I've seen them 12 times.
Really? I've seen them twice.
Yeah. They're always a solid show. And Red Hot's obviously one of the best live acts of all time.
Amazing. I saw them twice as well. Yeah. I kind of want to go to Paul McCartney there. He's playing June 28th at the T-Mobile Center.
Bucket list item, you know, you gotta see it.
You gotta see him, man. He's still doing it.
What was your largest non-poker wager?
My largest non-poker wager? Does investing my company count?
I guess so. I mean,
I'm
thinking more of your degeneracy stories.
Okay.
It's a good sign that you don't have anything. You don't.
I'm not a big degenerate.
Sports bets.
I do, but I keep it small. I bet with my friends, like when we watch the games together. Mm-hmm. Like I just bet with them. I think I bet like 4K on Duke to win the national championship the year that they played Wisconsin.
Okay.
Wisconsin beat like a really good Kentucky team. It was a couple years ago. And I lost all my brackets, so I was like, well, screw it. I'm just going to bomb in on Duke.
Wait, didn't Wisconsin beat Duke and then Wisconsin lost to Kentucky?
No, Wisconsin beat Kentucky in the Final Four.
In the Final Four, okay.
Then they played Duke. I think Duke might have beat Michigan State, maybe. Mm-hmm. But I had Kentucky, and if Kentucky won, I would have got second place in my bracket, which would have been worth like 20K or something nice like that. And then they just got Kaminsky'd. And
Frank Kaminsky, I forgot about that
guy.
What
a legend, huh? And so somehow like they had like literally 10 players going to the NBA, and they had like two teams. They were like, put five in? Okay, new five. And they just all went into it. And it was like such an unbelievable team, that Kentucky team. And I had them, and then they lost. So I just bombed in on Duke. And then what's his name? Grayson Allen just came through in the end of the second half. And it was one hell of a game.
Grayson Allen.
Isn't that his name?
He's the one who looks like Ted Cruz's son.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't really. He's probably better looking than Ted Cruz, but.
Well, most people are.
He's less goblin.
Screw you, Ted Cruz. This podcast is anti-Ted Cruz. We're taking a stand.
I'm not anti anyone, but. All right, sure.
Okay, we end the podcast the same way every time with a question from the random question generator. You ready?
Ready.
Have you ever been stopped by the police?
Like.
For any reason, I don't know.
Speeding or.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
you have a scarier story.
I've been stopped by the police. My scariest police story was in college. I had some paraphernalia in my room and was drinking. I was 18 years old, and I did nothing. But like I was in Sally Hall in Florida State. And the way the rooms are set up is like there's a common area and four people share a bathroom, but there's two separate rooms.
Yes. Same like Beatty Towers in Florida.
Okay. So my suite mate, not my roommate, he liked to drink and maybe some other extracurricular activities in there. And I went to sleep, but he basically... He took a knife and like stabbed his roommate's TV or something. Like his roommate didn't even know. So his roommate comes back, this homosexual black guy in drama. So obviously like maybe a little dramatic, you know. But
my TV's been stabbed.
Then again, your TV got stabbed by some drunk idiot. Like so, you know, maybe I shouldn't use those characteristics as a whatever.
I think it's worth calling the police.
I just wanted to kind of add to the story, like to give the people listening to like. So yeah, he calls the police. Mm-hmm. Police come. I'm passed out in my bed, like you know, just got like beer cans crushed like next to my bed and other things that might not be the best for a police person to see. And I wake up to a knock on my door. Open up, this is the police. And I'm just like, oh. So like I hide as many things as I can and I open the door. I'm like, hey, how's it going? Like I'm in my underwear and this guy's like, hey, do you know anything about the crime that's been committed next to you? And I'm just like, what?
Which crime?
I'm just like, what did he get into? I'm like, yeah, which crime? There's a couple. No. He just goes, do we have permission to search your room? And I go, wait, I have a choice? And he's like, do we have permission to search your room? And I just go, no. And he's like, good answer. He like could see in the room that everything's like, but he didn't have a warrant or anything like that. He didn't care. So,
I'm pretty sure what he sees from your doorway isn't even admissible.
No, it's not. And worst case scenario, a couple beer cans, like whatever, slap me on the wrist. I don't care. Like it's college, you know, like nobody's. I'm not driving. I'm not doing anything. I'm like, even though I would like to partake in some festivities back then, I'm more sober these days. I'm responsible, you know, so
whatever. So is that where it ended? Or did they take the guy away in cuffs for stabbing a TV?
Oh, yeah, they cuffed him. And I looked at the TV and I'm like, oh, man, why would you do that, you idiot? Like, and he was the one that stabbed the TV. He was like my best friend in the room, you know, like he was my boy. So, but yeah, I wasn't surprised. Like we got some stories of him just being he was a terrible influence on me, absolutely awful. But yeah, so maybe that was like the scariest encounter I had with police. But I'm not a bad person. I don't do anything. I've never been arrested. Never had any trouble. So Yeah, that's
clean cut Waxman. That's what they always say, right?
Yeah, CCW. That's what they call me.
Matt, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I am sorry I kept you way longer than I said I would.
Yeah.
But that was interesting, and
you got
appreciate
me going,
the stories.
Man. Yep. Thanks for having me.
That's it. That's the show. Thank you once again to Matt for taking the time out for the podcast. You can find out how his positivity initiative on Twitter went by following him at Matthew_Waxman. And you are going to want to follow him because Matt is currently working on a poker project that will be announced soon. The details are still being kept secret, but basically Matt's working on a free and highly competitive poker platform, and he's eyeing a release date for later this year. After you follow Matt, go ahead and follow us. You can find us on Twitter at CardPlayerMedia or at Poker_Stories. If this is your first episode with us, please hit the subscribe button. If you leave us a nice rating and a review, let us know about it with an email to PokerStories@CardPlayer.com, and you'll get a free digital subscription to CardPlayer Magazine. Thanks for listening.